healthcare reform. Today is, what is the date, the 19th?
All right.
February 19th. We have our agenda before us. But before we begin, I've been handed a document from Dr. Huntington. Doctor, could you just stand up and wave and so everyone knows who I'm talking about? It's actually a very comprehensive analysis of Senate Bill 329, and he has some recommendations on the back. And I've just had a chance to read this in a cursory fashion, but from the very beginning, he's talking about an ineffective and costly system, the number of uninsured, preventable suffering and cost, that half of all bankruptcies are medical bankruptcies. And on the back, he gets to some specific recommendations, including about being inclusive in our process and incorporating the best of Senate Bill 329 and the Oregon Better Health Act, the Archimedes proposal, as soon as that comes out. So anyway, Dr. Huntington, we very much appreciate your attendance, and we very much appreciate your commitment to Better Health Care.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
With that, we will begin our official deliberations this evening. We will continue in the informational format with Dr. Goldberg acting as moderator. We're going to do things a little bit differently tonight. We will cede command control of the meeting to Dr. Goldberg. We will have no chairs. Dr. Goldberg will act as facilitator, and Alan and I will sit quietly, kind of on our hands. I don't know, Alan, if you have anything you want to say to begin.
You covered it nicely. Thank you.
But again, thank you all for your continued commitment and participation in this. I know the evening is late, and this is an inconvenient time for many people to meet. But there is no inconvenient time for committed, caring people, so we appreciate your attendance. Dr. Goldberg,
thank you, Senator.
The show is yours. I'm putting the gavel up here pretty far out of reach.
Okay, that means that I want to get something done.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably true, sir.
And Senator Cruz, you were not here last Wednesday night. So let me see if I can't recap for you and for everybody else. We solved the health care problem. As you can see, we now live in a very healthy state. And tonight, we're on to global warming.
The reason we got that done was because you weren't here.
Now, if you would like to grab us back again, that's okay, back to health care.
So it's my choice.
Yes.
My choice. Well, let's just recap.
Okay, do recap then. We talked a lot about a structure, an architecture, about how we would take a healthcare system and begin to move it from where we are today to where we want to be. And it was a rather free-ranging discussion. We talked about a lot of the items that we'd want to see in a healthcare system and talked a lot about how we would structure some sort of an entity, and we talked about what an oversight entity might do, the roles and responsibilities it might have. It was a pretty free-flowing discussion. And what I'd like to propose is that I took a stab at capturing what we talked about in one sentence. And I think that what we talked about was, and I want to see if there's agreement and perhaps a little discussion, is that we have a healthcare system that right now functions as any system should, as it was designed, and that there was no master design. It's basically become what it is through a series of what one would call a patchwork quilt. And I think where the group spoke about last week was how we would sort of create a different kind of a a system, and that in order to do that, Oregon's healthcare system is best served by an entity of some sort. We used a lot of different words last week, but by an entity that has regulatory and oversight authority over its design, operation, and funding. So I want everyone to take a look at that. I'll repeat it once more. Oregon's healthcare system is best served by an entity that has regulatory and oversight authority. Those are actually key words that people spoke about. And we talked about design, operation, funding. And rather than wordsmith this, I'm wondering if this is, in a general sense, a concept that captured the discussion and captures where this group would like to go forward. Is this something people feel they can live with?
Yes.
Senator Mona Sanderson.
Yes.
I think Representative Richardson.
It does capture the discussion we've had. I reserve my position as to can we live with it or not, since I've not seen anywhere that it's been implemented that I can go to as an analogy and say that it is really successful and that it's working well. It is a choice. It is one path to follow. And so I'm happy to proceed with the discussion, having no idea whether it'll work or not work, because we don't know who's going to be on it, what their motivations will be, who's going to select them, how long they're going to be there, what it's going to cost, or what the fiscal will be and what they come up with.
Right, and what that really means and what they'll do, which is to come. Great. Senator Cruz.
Dr. Goldberg, the discussion I had last Wednesday night was basically about how beautiful my wife was and how lucky I was to be married to her. But
she agreed.
Something we all agree on.
I guess my one concern there is operation and funding. I don't see this, and maybe I'm getting ahead of the curve here about where the operational level, where the structural operational piece of it is. I mean, we certainly need to have an entity that sets sideboards and kind of the rules of the game, more or less. What I would hate to see happen is, if those who can remember back to Senate Bill 100, when we created the land use system that was supposed to be a locally driven process, and now we have a nightmare. And because something that was supposed to be a commission and was a commission when it started out became a department, and that's called DLCD. And I mean, I have some real fears in that. And you know, at a 70,000 foot level, I can let that stand. But just with the understanding that there are significant components on that I think need to be local.
Senator Morissette.
Well, in looking at the bill, Section 15 on page 6 talks about there will be created a task force to review the Oregon Health Fund program and so on and so forth. It seems to me the task force should consider the governing body. The task force, I think, is an interim appointment, 16 members. Is that correct?
You are reading that correctly, but as we put that in the bill, we consider that a very important part of the structure. Number, who's on it, some of Dennis's articulately expressed concerns. That has got to be done incredibly well and incredibly right. So, you know, in terms of the composition of the board, I mean, we see what's in 329, you know, as a recognition that there needs to be a composition of the board, and that is best described as a placeholder as it currently exists.
I guess what I was getting at is that we can only go so far. I think this session, I think that a task force, there are two things. there's going to be a subcommittee or an interim committee, I would imagine, that would continue this discussion. At the same time, there may be a larger task force that would have to have some input into a governance system. I don't know that we can come up with a governance system. And that includes, the one that's described here is a paid board. I mean, that's big bucks. You know, that's a huge fiscal impact when we appoint a large board of directors for our system. So I think we have to take this to give it our best shot and brainstorm, and then if that fails, the task force has to consider that. Will there be a task force at the same time as there is an interim committee to consider this? So we're going to have two groups, or is the interim committee going to be part of a task force?
Well, I think that's exactly what we're going to work our way towards, is defining what this entity is, what the structure is. First thing is to get some agreement, and then to talk about the roles and responsibilities, with the idea that you're going to be writing a bill. So you'll be actually filling in all of those details. So I think that will come. Senator Bates.
Thank you. What we're trying to get to here is a way of starting to give some form to what this committee is doing and give form to what the healthcare system is going to look like. We presently have a system which we've been talking about for 10 or 15 years, intensely talking about for the last 2 years, that basically says we will do everything humanly possible for the individual patient, regardless of cost, regardless of you get much out of that, much benefit out of what you do. And that is not working. It's a system that has no transparency to it and really essentially no competition in it. To change that system, we have to have what we'll call right now an entity that starts putting what we've been loosely calling sideboards on it. We all know things that need to be done. The question is, how do we get them done and what structure do we have to get them done? What we're trying to decide here is if we can sit down in the next few weeks, set up that structure, and tell ourselves and others what that structure's duties, responsibilities, authority is, and oversight of that structure. If we don't do that, we're in the same system we have now. And I would challenge people that if this is something you're incredibly uncomfortable with, and I understand some uncomfortableness because you don't know exactly who's on it, what does it do, and how does it do it. What else do we have that's going to move this? Right now, we're sitting on a train that's going down a track at 120 miles an hour, and the curve up ahead is 60 miles an hour. This thing's going to come off. We cannot continue the healthcare costs we've got and the terrible outcomes we've got as a result of that. So, from my point of view, we actually have to do this. We have to set the structure up and then start talking very specifically about what that structure does over the next few weeks as far as things we've talked about. What's it look like? Who's on it? What's the oversight? What's its authority? What's it responsible for? I think if those questions get answered, people will feel a lot more comfortable or maybe a lot more uncomfortable. But we have to do those things.
Why don't we start with the existing providers? Who's providing our health care services now at the local level, and bring a bunch of them in the room, and then they can come up and tell us what they think should happen?
We're going to get to that.
I are one of them.
Well, the organizations I'm talking
about. Yeah, but you're from Ashland.
No, I'm not. I'm from Medford. Okay?
Okay. The organizations that are currently providing the services around the state should be consulted in terms of what their role is going to be. They are the contracted people who provide the services, and did not include them in this conversation, I think, is too bad.
I don't think we've even started the conversation to a place where they could...
Okay, we could say, tell us what your perfect healthcare system for Oregon would be like. You are a provider. What would you like to see it... How would you like to see it combined... made into a statewide centralized system? I mean, those are the people who should be asking.
Mr. Facilitator.
Senator, co-chair Westland.
William.
Yes.
I don't think there has been any conversation, implication, or innuendo that the providers, the stakeholders, those with expertise and acumen either will be excluded from this conversation because they will sit right there in those chairs, nor have they been excluded. I mean, for a year, the Senate Commission heard from those very stakeholders and providers that you so frequently reference. And they were indeed part and parcel to the crafting of Senate Bill 329. I mean, they are part of the solution. And they are the providers that, as we go forward under any structure, that will continue to provide the services. So your concerns about not hearing from those that are in the trenches, I think, are, you know, overblown.
Okay. We're not hearing from them now.
I think I think the issue is that's certainly true. No. I think that what the co-chairs have wanted to do was to come up with something that providers and others could actually react to, as opposed to having a lot of different ideas and then having you figure out which ones to put together and then have people react to that again. So I think it's a matter of style. So can you live with that we will proceed and
I guess my concern is that we do build the new system on the foundation of the old system, otherwise we're wasting our time.
Dr. Colbert?
I agree. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think Senator Morris said it's going to something that's more basic, and that is the question of, do you select an entity and let them make the decision, or are we involved in making that decision? And that goes back to this very fundamental question. Is an entity the one that has a responsibility to do these things, or is it a legislative function?
I think that's a great question, and I think that you will eventually need to answer that as to what the role and function is of that entity.
Mr. Facilitator?
Yes?
Back to the original, or the question posed there, I want to not disagree with what the good representative from Medford originally said, or is it Eagle Point? The Central Point, oh my God. Not disagree with, you know, some of his concerns and anxieties. I think we've all got those. But I want to agree particularly with his observation that he doesn't have any metrics or measuring sticks to judge this against, because he's absolutely correct. No one in the country is this far along in considering significant steps in managing creating a management structure for healthcare. Not Massachusetts, not California, not Wisconsin, not all the states, Pennsylvania that are, talking about. No one is this far along, because once again, Oregon is, without question, out in front on this issue. So I absolutely agree with Representative Richardson when hey, how do we judge this? That's a concern. As to the fundamental question, are we better served if we have some entity management structure, with authorities, limited authorities? Absolutely. My response to your question is absolutely yes.
So I have heard some yeses, some I think I can live with it, but I'm not sure what it means. Haven't heard any no's yet. Representative Cannon?
Yes.
Representative Maurer?
Thank you. I am not going to say no,
But I reserve judgment based on the conversation because I think the discussion is extremely important. And, I mean, I have questions in operation. When you're talking about design and funding, I think those are areas that you can look at a 50,000-foot level or 70,000-foot level, depending what kind of aircraft you fly, but not 7.
A lot of detail to put up.
I understand. But operation, I guess I have concerns about that, but I'm going to stay here for the conversation.
Representative Greenland?
Could you read what it says, please?
What?
Could you read what it says, please? Sure. I'm having trouble with the last sentence.
Okay. I took the liberty of trying to put something down for people to react to. It says, Oregon's healthcare system is best served by an entity that has regulatory and oversight authority over its design, operations, and the question was, is this trying to summarize where we came from last meeting and understanding that there is a large amount of work to define all of this, be clear about roles and responsibilities. But was this something that people could live with?
Yeah, I'd certainly say, I mean, I'd say it might need more than one. As a start, you can imagine one that manages and designs the insurance piece of the system, the finance piece, another that deals with the delivery system. But I think, yeah, basically, as a starting proposition, it's something that we absolutely have to explore for a minute.
Senator Morris, I know you just came in. Don't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, give him an overview. I mean, for Mitch
We've been talking, sort of trying to summarize last week. We had a lot of discussion about what roles and responsibilities of some sort of a board or a design team or a management team might look like. And we got into a little bit of a chicken and an egg. Some people saying, gee, we can't really talk about some sort of a structure until we know what it is they have to do. And others who said, well, you need to have a structure to define what it is that needs to be done. And we've talked a lot. And wondering if this is a place to start, where we sort of, there can be a consensus that we need to have a system that in some way is managed. And there's an architecture to it.
Is this a survey process we're in right now?
More or less.
Well,
and without wordsmithing, just a second.
Right. No, I think you've captured in a general way, but I think we can't rely on the board to make all the decisions. I think we have to make a lot of decisions to create the guidance, policy guidance, and then the board executes. But the board has to have authority to execute.
Exactly. I think that's been a common theme. Representative Richardson spoke about that.
I want to ask Senator Morris a question here, if I could. I think of three general organizations that this would fall under that might be get people thinking about what a board could do. One is our managed care plans we have for the state on the Medicaid program. They are basically accountable health plans that report back to the legislature, more or less, in a secondhand fashion through a map. I think of the Kaiser group, which is also an entity to itself. It doesn't report to anybody, but have held some costs down. And I think of your group. You're a part of the Samaritan group, if I remember right, which has tried to form a community-based program. How would your group fit into or work under or work with this kind of a group? If you were competing for Oregon health cards, you know, had a pool to draw from, and you were competing with other entities, would it be something that a board that laid out a benefit package and put some sideboards up, would that be helpful to you? Or would it make things more difficult? more importantly, from my point of view, the two key things we're driving to here are access, universal access, and cost control, which we have needed in this country right now.
But, you know, I can't speak with authority. I can speak generally about Samaritan Health Services. I believe that we would be responsive as a healthcare provider to the parameters that we would establish, which is that basic managed care model. We're an integrated system with primary care, some specialty care physicians, 5 hospitals, an insurance product, as well as a captive liability insurance company. So we've kind of reached out and drawn a lasso around a lot of issues. I would see us being responsive to meeting, you know, whatever the requirements are for that basic managed care, and would be adaptable to make it work.
Representative
Greenwood. I mean, as I was thinking about this and thinking about what does the healthcare system need to look like, and with the assumption that we're going somewhere from a laissez-faire model now, that just everything happens however it happens, to something that's going to be more organized, it really took me to the PEB board as a way of thinking of this as a microcosm, where the PEB board sets a set of rules, and it deals with accountable health plans that it defines in a certain way. It sets a benefit package, and it says, well, anybody, you, Samaritan, anybody else, can bid into this system for getting some of our business. And it's even been trying to figure out how to change the delivery system, at least in terms of how healthcare is delivered to its beneficiaries. It hasn't gone very far with that yet, but it's done some things on prevention. It's done a variety of things. But I mean, it seems to me that's the way that I could imagine moving that to, let's say, next, all the state organized healthcare systems, which could be Medicaid and that, and Healthy Kids that we pass out and other expansions. You could imagine something analogous to the PEB board having some overall responsibility. We said, okay, here's the benefit that we're willing to pay, or maybe two benefits, maybe for this kind and this kind of benefit, and here's the conditions. And anybody, any accountable health plan can bid for it, but only if they're willing to do this set of things. Pay differently for evidence-based systems, have this tight drug formulary, do this in prevention. I mean, you can imagine, I was just sort of visioning in my mind, an expansion of that kind of a model incrementally into different pieces of the healthcare system as we move along, and maybe eventually to Medicare and to other things, but just saying, all right, here's our universe, and for our universe, we're going to do some heavy-duty things, and anybody can play that wants to play, but they got to play on our rules. And our beneficiaries will get X, but they won't get Y, because we don't have enough money to provide Y, and that's the way it's going to be. I mean, it's certain.
You just covered just about everything on the list here that I had flipped over based on the discussion last week about what are some of the things you'd look for a PEB board, an entity, to do. You didn't quite use all these words, but you talked about determining how healthcare dollars were spent. Talked about utilization, limiting or overseeing. Somehow that was a big theme last week, doing something about utilization. Sustainable funding, being certain that there's quality, assuring a high quality. Access to basic health care. Last week we talked about defining an architecture, which was really what you were talking about, Mitch, about looking at delivery systems and how those might work. Senator Moore said, I do have workforce prominently right here to talk about, because that was also another responsibility, is assuring there's an appropriate workforce. There's an issue about whether this entity would make or carry out policy, but these are some of the things I think you were just talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And the PEB board makes some policy. The legislature makes policy. Right. Hands over the PEB board, and they can.
You have to be. There's that needs to be defined. So where does it work?
Would Kaiser Permanente be outside of this system, or would they be part of it?
In the same way it's a part of the PET system, I would see it being a part of this system. They want to play in this game. They want to become an accountable health plan. Mm-hmm. Then they operate like an accountable health plan. And I mean, it's very interesting. In the PEB system, Kaiser has always been a closed panel, and they decided, PEB decided that isn't exactly what they wanted. And now Kaiser in the PEB system has a point of service option with a network where the beneficiaries pay one share 15% copay and a total open system where they pay 30% copay up to some kind of limit. I mean, Kaiser just modified itself to morph into the kind of accountable health plan that PEB wanted them to be.
Based on a lot of the direction that they got from the PEB board.
So, and that's a very legitimate question, Bill, but you know, so we can get to those type of questions, you're the facilitator, but so with the definition, I mean, asking the question, is healthcare better served by some entity that, you know, has some authorities with the concerns that we all have expressed, is that a consensus of the committee? But the answer to Bruce's question is yes.
The answer, I think, unfortunately, at this point, is going to have to be no, and let me explain why. And I got even further from it when I saw page 2, and even further from it when Mitch compared it to PEB.
See, I thought I had consensus. You asked the question a second time.
Government solution to solving problems is creating more government. We're doing that here. I guess, and I'm looking at that and I'm saying we're tweaking what currently exists and we're still going to use actuarial data, which I hate with a passion, and we need to get rid of all the actuaries and use accountants. If we're going to get to true cost, that's what we have to do. I don't see us drilling down to true cost here, and we're setting up an entity to develop a system, to develop a roadmap to a place we don't even know where is at this point in time. I mean, shouldn't the first job at this point to be to aggressively seek a waiver and an act of Congress? Shouldn't that be job one? Because clearly, if we have those federal dollars on the table, it changes the discussion. And also, Bruce, I'm not willing to cede to some commission the responsibility of a legislature to do the things that are clearly in our purview to do. So from that perspective, I'm hesitant.
And I think you have good reason to be. I guess I would say all those issues you raised are questions that remain to be answered. I don't know what the responsibility is of the legislature or of this entity. I think you raised some great points about, we'll get to them in a second, being certain we pay true costs. Well, what is that? How do you define that? A lot of questions that have to be answered. I think the issue was there needs to be a way to do that.
If I could just modify something, I don't actually hate actuaries. I mean, I'm sure they're fine people, but I'm not sure actuarial data gets us to where we want to be, was the point I was trying to make there. Hate's a strong word. I shouldn't use that.
You know the definition of an outgoing actuary?
No.
They look at your shoes instead of their own.
Okay.
Actuaries are people that don't have the personality to become accountants.
Ooh. Double slam.
Wow.
That was harsh, Mitch.
This is a good time to make an announcement. Could Mary Beth Healy please stand up?
Okay. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, just stand up. The absolutely sacred protocol. For the pizza that I have bought.
Actually, you didn't, but that's okay.
The, is after the committee has satiated themselves after a long legislative day, the audience is welcome to get all the pizza because we got plenty. One individual in this room has violated that principle. I won't mention any names or even initials, but please, everyone, feel free to get pizza.
Thank you, Senator. Would you like some pizza? Can
we
just say?
Oh, I'm a disciplined responsible.
Okay, we're going to get back to. I would say we're going to get back to actuaries, but that's a bit.
I agree with Senator Cruz regarding the waiver, but before we can get the waivers, we have to have a roadmap to submit to them, or they're not going to give us a waiver. And so that's why I really buy into this system, the statement that you said before. Yes, we're not sure where we're going to go, but if we have to have a roadmap so that we can go to the feds to get those waivers. And if we can get those waivers, if we can accomplish that this session, that would be awesome.
Senator Morse, and then Senator Bates.
Thank you. It might be helpful to go back to the very point of beginning. And the two key words at the very point of beginning, the first meeting, even convening this commission, were what? Access.
What did you say, Frank?
The first, the two key words mm-hmm. that convened this commission in the very beginning were access and affordability. Okay. Now, access, I believe that we've crossed that threshold. I know that I have personally, in terms of this needs to be accessible to Oregonians. Okay? But, and that's, use the word universal, that's a loaded word, but it probably works. The issue is affordability, and how do you structure a system that is sustainable? And remember, we've talked about that. So that's the key, is how do we develop something that is in fact affordable into the future and provides quality health care?
Let me just check something with the rest of the committee for a second. Because I think what you're saying is we've really got to delve into, so what does it mean to be affordable? How do you make that affordable? How do you fund it? What is access to what? A lot of questions that need to be nailed down. And I'm wondering if, in a moment or two, after folks say a few more words, we can actually put down a list of some of those things where we want to spend the next several weeks, one by one, actually taking each of those things and talking about what it is that this entity, the legislature, is doing, what we mean, and defining all of that. Because that's where, in the end, you'll all either say, yes, that's what I can sign up for, or no, that's not what this is for me. How is that?
Give it a shot.
Okay. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Bruce. I think bringing up the PET board was really germane, because the PET board's a great example and a terrible example of what this might look like at the same time. The problem with the PET board is that at many levels, there's no skin in the game for the consumer. Some of these programs have no premium, minimal co-pays, and it costs just escalate that way. Others, I think of Kaiser, I believe offered an HSA program or something equivalent to it this time to sign up. So you've got that kind of thing built into some of it, but not completely. It also illustrates, from my point of view, if you look at the PEB board and who's on the PEB board, there are questions to be asked there, too. That's the kind of question that I know Dennis Richardson wants answered, you want answered, and I would offer that for a board of the type we're talking about, that kind of a makeup probably isn't appropriate. Also talk about what real powers the PEB board has, because this goes back to what you people are concerned about. Can it tell insurance what the basic benefit package is going to look like, and do they put one together that isn't overly robust? Do they tell those programs what they want to do as far as delivery systems are concerned, primary versus secondary care, formularies, and things of that nature? They do to a degree, but not completely. How far do you want to go with that? When you start answering those questions, you'll find out whether you really want this structure or not, what that structure looks like. Until we answer those questions, you can't do it. What we have to agree to tonight, yeah, okay, we are on board to look at the structure. We're going to do that. Now let's put the pieces together and see where we're at. And I think if we do that, we've made progress, and over the next few weeks, we'll hammer this stuff out. But, I mean, I don't see the PEB board as the one we want to go to, but it's illustrative of where kind of we want to go. But you've got to make some pretty big tweaks to make it work for something this big, to make it much more effective.
Let's make it a big F-chip and let the F-chips deal with the problem.
There might be some resistance there.
Other comments? Okay. We've got about a half an hour. And what I thought we could do is, in essence, talk about the next several meetings and talk about now what the authorities, what the definitions, what the responsibilities of this entity would be. And broke them down into some topics. I forgot. I forgot the key one that Senator Moore started us with, which is assuring access for everybody. That was one of the tasks. I've heard last time we talked about transparency. You wanted a system where the costs and quality information were transparent to people. That needs to be defined, how that would happen. How you would fund this.
Bruce, can I ask a question? I mean, basically, it seems to me we're talking about a new healthcare system for some or a large part or all of the people of Oregon. And basically, what we're talking about now is a board that will define and manage that healthcare system. Is that, and that might not be for 3.5 million people. It might be for 1 million people. It might be for some other number. So these are the questions for that board that's going to design a new healthcare system for...
Entity. We're not even calling it a board yet.
An entity that is going to create and manage a new healthcare system for some part of the Oregon population.
To be defined.
And in order to do that, these are the jobs they need to do to design both the insurance piece of that and the delivery piece of that.
Correct. And they may not do it themselves. They may have, as you had suggested, series of other groups that help with expertise around a variety of other issues, but they would help to coordinate that and help either set or operationalize the policy. So what I thought we'd do is think about the kinds of issues they would need to grapple with, get a list down, and then actually prioritize a couple, not based on importance, but actually based on your willingness as a group to spend the next few weeks taking a couple and actually working your way through what that would mean, what responsibilities you would give this entity, how you would do that. What do you mean by quality? How would you actually make that a reality? So I've got access, transparency, funding, quality has come up. You want to assure the highest quality healthcare. How do you do that? Workforce and geographic need and building upon what we have that works was another thing. Talked about a lot of talk about needing to do something about utilization, but the question is what and how you would do that, through policy, through a delivery system, talked about evidence-based care, talked about payment, paying costs, and incentives to assure that the right care gets delivered, talked a lot about being certain it's affordable. What is it on there? Representative
Mallon. Services offered, or more specifically, services not covered.
Okay.
let's actually.
And then, and basically, if you want to tie that, you've got to develop
the benefits.
A benefit plan.
That's, so the benefits isn't on there.
Well, yeah.
Both what you're offering and what you're not offering. I mean, is that captured or?
Yeah. And again, it gets back to the authority of this entity. If this entity has to go back to the state mandates that we now have in place, the federal mandates that we now have in place, then they're not going to be able to provide the access. They're not going to be able to deal with payment and incentive systems. So it truly is about redefining the healthcare system, which falls on the delivery models that we have in place today.
And some of that you control in terms of some of those mandates are state statute, and that would be an issue about looking at changing state statute. And some, as was proposed, are about federal, and that's where the whole issue of waivers comes in.
I have a question. When you talk about waivers, are you also throwing in Medicare? I mean,
it's
not a waiver. It's not a waiver. It takes an act of Congress.
It would be a legislative, congressional waiver.
Congressional waiver.
No, just an act of Congress.
But two different things, but they're very close related. One is I believe Senator Cruz is talking about a waiver for the Medicaid program, probably one which we will discuss what it would look like as far as expanding the program and eligibility and all the rest of it. The other piece of this, when you talk about Medicare, ultimately, if you have a program that's working and functioning, it is having a significant effect on controlling costs, because Medicare doesn't have an access problem. You're 65, you're in. But if you have something that actually works for cost control, you would potentially want to ask Congress to develop a law that allows a waiver, because right now there's no way to get a waiver. It is not in Medicare law. So this program, this bill, could potentially ask that Congress consider granting Medicare waivers. Not that we're going to ask for one or ever want one, but that they set it up so you potentially could ask for one.
It's waiving federal authority to do something. Mitch.
I think Ron heard something that is even more intriguing than simply benefits, which had to do with talking about what services you deliver is a little different than what benefits are. And the nature of those services. I mean, for example, we could define that what you wanted was something like the British National Health Service primary care system, where we paid capitation to individual physicians wherever they were as a way of dealing with primary care. Or we could say, no, primary care ought to be organized in integrated units that had other things with it, public health nurses, and I mean a variety of things. You could imagine saying, we're actually going to change the services we provide with this model. I mean, conceivably, that might be the way to get the savings that you might want to get, or it might not. But it's certainly something we need to think about. We're going to change the service delivery models.
I put down services there. Obviously, this is what the conversation will be on the evening we start to talk about benefits and services. So great.
Liability.
And Bruce, I want to go back to something actually Representative Maurer raised with regard to Medicare. And I mean, I see this, you know, as we go forward, you know, fully accepting the responsibility that, you know, we have an obligation to look at as big a picture reform as we can. But, you know, I see this as something that, as we go back and ask for the waivers, that may complement and work in concert, maybe that's the wrong word, with Medicare. Because, I mean, we need to do a lot of work there. You know, we don't fix this if we don't address.
Comment. The way I see it is, unless Medicare is brought into the purview of the waiver or some authority to change how we deliver health care to seniors, then we are going to be unable to alter our delivery system for everybody else. Because the reality is that Medicare drives the system. It drives the system, it drives the services that we provide to everybody else, in whether you're Medicaid or your private insurance.
And I think it's important to point out that when we mention that word behind this dais, the last thing we're talking about is, you know, doing away with or eliminating. I mean, I think there's ways to improve Medicare. I mean, it's just nuts right now that it doesn't have a long-term care application where seniors have to spend down, become a dual eligible to get some long-term care services. I mean, that's just wrong, and one of the issues that could be addressed. But, I mean, I don't want to get too far off into the Medicare field, but, I mean, we're looking for, you know, as comprehensive a reform as we sustainable that includes universality and controls cost, and most importantly, lowers cost. Because if we can't lower cost, we got nothing.
And now it seems you're talking about a strategic issue, knowing that a large portion of our healthcare system is in this state about Medicare. You're really talking about strategically how and when do you tackle that? First, second, third, whether you look at what Representative Greenleaf talked about is starting with a more defined population and then eventually branching out to the entire state, or whether you're talking about the whole state at once.
Can I raise a hurdle in this?
Is this one hurdle?
That's it. That's great.
is in our little clinic, Medicare accounts for about a third of our encounters, because we go per encounter. And the question would be, am I going to alter the services that we offer, alter my delivery model, if Medicare, which is the primary driver, single driver, is not changed? And I'm not sure we could go there. And it has to do with what services we offer, whether we had a social worker in the clinic, whether we had a psychologist whatever these people are. I'm not sure I would be able to justify altering my business plan or business model if it doesn't apply to everybody, because now I've got two systems that I have to deal with, and as a rural health clinic, I have to deal with everybody. I can't exclude. I can't say, well, Medicare, go over here, and everybody else, we're going to do something else. I think that's one of my hurdles in this whole debate.
Right. And right now, how many...
Hurdle and an opportunity.
Yeah, this is exactly the discussion, and that's going to come up when you talk about funding and when you talk about all of these issues. Mm-hmm. Senator Bates and Senator Morissette.
Two things quickly. Let me first respond to you, because I have the same exact problem, of course, obviously. Right now I have to deal with about 20 or 25 systems. I would welcome getting down to two. It would be a boon. Every time I need to make a referral, it depends what insurance cut I have, whether I have to get prior off, whether I have to do it myself. There's a dozen different things I have to go through. Every time I look at a patient that may need mental health, it depends what insurance they have, where they go to, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, or private. On the other hand, I'm much more concerned of the system we're looking at. The primary driver, I believe, for hospitals is Medicare, not just by 30%, probably more like 40 or 50%. And admittedly, we're not going to get all the way there without changing Medicare. I agree. But that is sort of a bridge too far as process for me right now, although we can start the process by saying we need a waiver, okay, and putting it out there, because knowing it'll take years to get that waiver, years. Get that waiver. We'd be lucky to have one 3 or 4 years from now. Having said that, I hope I've answered your question a little bit. I know not completely. When I look at this list, Bruce, I'm thinking of where we're going to be going the next couple of weeks in discussions, and I think things like Med Mal's it up there. Well, yeah, it's in utilization. It's in affordability. I think things like, rate setting. Well, it's in there under payments and incentives. I mean, I went kind of through my mind or things. Only one I couldn't find there looking at it, maybe I missed it, was personal responsibility. We've had a difficulty trying to figure out how we're going to get a cultural change for many people on personal responsibility. How do you get people to change their behavior, not only in how they access the healthcare system, but how they change their personal decisions about eating, drinking, and smoking, and exercise. That's something that's going to be harder to build into this thing, but it's real.
Laser games.
And skiing. And yeah. Don't forget skiing and racquetball.
Yes. I've survived both of them so far, although I had kind of round spots in my head once in a while.
Okay, so personal responsibility is up there. Maybe one of those things that...
I can't quite fit it in. But I thought everything else was pretty well covered of the major topics we have to discuss.
Senator Morissette.
Well, I think the key to any system is the flexibility to move around on the lowest level of providing care, which would be at the safety net clinics. And the main problem is cost shifting. Now, if we can avoid cost shifting to a higher level of care, that would solve a lot of the problems in terms of financials and so on. Now, if you have the ability to order mental health or alcohol drug addiction, and you had all of these providers in your area, and you could refer patients that you can't deal with to them, and they are part of your system, and they're compensated, and you're the director of, or the physician who is a director of a small clinic in his area has access to all of those services, that ultimately is going to prevent the cost shift. Now, that has to be tied to a larger system, but I think it all starts at the lowest level, the most basic level, and the savings are what's going to make the system viable.
So would you say that's covered in generally in payments and incentives?
Yeah.
That we had heard about trying to pay the cost of care and not wanting to cost shift, that when we deal with payments and incentives, that's one of the issues certainly be top on the agenda.
You pretty well eliminate car shift with access and benefit package. If you have assumed that everyone's going to get an organ health card, a lot of the car shift goes away as far as it insured, and the benefit package would be, the essential benefit package would cover some of that at least.
But where do they go for service? This question.
Well,
in rural Oregon, where do they go?
Well, that's certainly something that you're going to have to talk about when we talk about workforce and geography, and being certain that's focused on.
And instead of sending your bill to all the different insurance companies, there's one or two sources of repayment that you have, that we have access to, that the providers have access to. And that eliminates a lot of the... And then instead of waiting 3 months for a wraparound payment, you have a different way of reimbursement. And that's all got to be part of the system in order for it to be viable.
So in a few minutes, I'm going to say if we can't get your choices as to the first couple that you want to tackle. Because I think you're all sort of chomping at the bit to start to actually talk about some of the details. But let's see if we have them all.
Can we have a little parking lot somewhere about things we might literally be able to do now without needing to go to Nirvana? I mean, this business is about 25 different claims forms. I don't understand. I don't know why we couldn't mandate the Medicare claims form. If all insurance companies doing business in Portland that have one claims form, we don't need to wait for this. That's something we could.
Mitch, it's not claims forms. It's referral systems.
It's also claims form. Harriet worked for
a great parking lot issue, which, as we go through all of these, I think that's some of the strategy of what things can you actually do something about, perhaps right away. So
Kaiser has the only different kind of claims form.
I guess on top of what Mitch is talking about, it's not just claims forms. It's all the times you have to check back with somebody to verify this, and then you got to check with that them to verify that. I mean, it's
and of course, it's paring down the first time.
Just it's paring down the bureaucracy into a minimum.
Let me give you an example of how it really works. Every month I sit down and write about 60 or 70 checks back to patients. Those checks are from $1.10 to $75 and all odd, weird amounts. What you do, the patient comes in, they see you, they have a charge of the visit, and they have no idea what their copay really is going to be or what the insurer is going to allow and pay back.
Mm-hmm.
Then the confusion starts and the circus starts. And this goes on for months at a time, and you keep getting things in the mail. Everyone's kind of nodding their heads out or says, this is not a bill. I think it's not a bill. Well, maybe it is a bill. Or is this what the insurance says I'm going to have to pay, or they haven't decided what they're going to pay, and maybe I should, well, I'm not sure. And this goes on with, and then I get phone calls, you get phone calls, the insurance company gets phone calls. It's not a clear and simple system, and each insurer is different. If you have an oversight board, they might say, everyone uses the same form, which they basically do, everyone has the same deductible, which we can manage. And when you walk into the doctor's office and walk out, you know what you had to pay. You've paid on the spot, and you know what's going to happen. That is a system that can be set up. Insurance companies, the AHPs, can still compete on another basis, but at least they know where they stand on that.
We're actually working at something like that over in the house right now.
So in the remaining minutes, I think what our facilitators ask us to do is prioritize this list and...
Not prioritize.
Just order of work.
Talk about which are the first three you want to tackle. We'll just take three or four at a time.
We're functionally setting the committee agenda here for the next couple of...
For the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
So don't think about it as prioritization, because you may not want to talk about the most important. Like you might want to talk about that thing that you might be able to talk about and actually get through to be able to sort of get an item or two under your belt. So there may be some things here that are more controversial than others and some that may not be. So
there's actually been quite a amount of work about affordability.
Okay.
And that actually can be, I think the Health Policy Commission did a good job, that can be.
Yes. So, Mitch, you're voting for affordability?
No, I'm voting for not having to do that when somebody else already did it.
Okay.
I would vote for the hardest one.
Which is?
Funding.
Okay.
What if we don't all agree that affordability's already been done?
Oh.
All I'm saying is to start with what, I mean, there's this whole work about what's affordable at different levels and things like that that could just be handed over, and then you can deal with it.
Tear it apart. And
so let's do this. Think for a moment and just come up with your top three or four. And I'm just going to go around and put a mark, and those will be we'll figure out the first few to start with. So Senator Cruz, which ones do you want?
Access.
That's okay. And anything else? Give me a couple more.
A couple more, because access, done right, this could take a hell of a long time. I think I'll go to benefits and affordability, and those are, yeah.
Okay, well done. Representative
Cannon? Funding, access, and benefits.
Representative Mao?
Same.
That was funding, access, and benefits. Representative Richardson.
Transparency, affordability, benefits.
Transparency, affordability, and...
Not the bottom.
Benefits. Representative Freeman.
Benefits, access, and funding.
Benefits, access, and funding.
I would suggest to our audience that what you're seeing here is a good example of why we need some management authority in the healthcare delivery system. This is our exhibit one for the management board.
Yeah, except if I want to know why we don't have stickers to put up here. Why?
Yeah, yeah. Well, what is this?
Why we have this low tech model?
Or not?
Yellow or green? Senator Mona Sanders.
Transparency, benefits, and I really like utilization, but I feel utilization...
Yeah. Go, Lori.
Thank you.
This is just first ones that come to your mind. Senator Morse?
Well, the first one for me would be affordability, because it then leads into discussion about what are the cost drivers. And unless we tackle that, I think we've got a problem. Then I would go to benefits and access.
You notice he's the only one that explained his choices? I just...
he had more time to think about it.
He did.
Senator Morse.
Well, I think workforce and geographic is the basis of what we're doing. And from that, I think affordability and benefits...
You could vote for one three times.
No.
Okay.
But I think the workforce is the key.
You've been stressing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it one plus.
Well, now we know who's important in this group.
Right.
Well, when you only get one.
I just wanted to know that I heard that.
Thank you.
Senator Wessel.
I'll put three on
transparency.
You're just trying to be a...
Step in the ballot box.
And Bates. Senator Bates has lost his vote.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm facilitating. That's it.
Yeah, he's the power and control. You're out.
Right? I was given authority.
Exactly.
Bruce, did Burson and Maher vote?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I've gotten everybody.
But Dr. Bates.
Bates is out.
You don't show up.
He was off. He was off the floor.
Lose, you lose.
He was off the floor. That's it.
Benefit. Transparency
and workforce
access, affordability.
That's enough.
That's good. benefits got a lot of votes. That would be a great place to start this week.
Huge.
And that Wednesday.
Huge.
Okay. So, and then we'll. We'll decide after that which ones we'll tackle, but it'll be one of those three, and we'll keep this list.
Bruce,
we can add to it.
It's kind of interesting with that benefits and versus services. I mean, it's interesting when you go to the Oregon Health Plan, the issue is not benefits. I mean, they provide doctor's care and they provide hospital care. The issue is what you can receive inside those benefits because of some restrictions. So somewhere that's going to be in... Obviously, in our discussions, it's going to be very interesting.
That's going to be a robust discussion, I believe.
Well,
so let me ask you a question then. Do you, knowing that we're going to do benefits in 48 hours, what do you need in preparation?
The answers.
Okay. And the questions would be?
I would like to have a little bit of idea of what our prioritized list looks like for Medicaid.
Wow.
You know, we've had, there's been a lot of references over the last 3 or 4 years about other systems and what services they offer. And it's really not about the benefit services, what services they offer. And so what is the Swiss model? What is the... UK system, because I know the UK system, you're 50% more likely to die if you're diagnosed with cancer than you are in the United States. And that's just the reality. So what services are offered in these other systems?
I'd like to see that data.
Okay, get you that data.
So,
what are their packages like?
Kind of true.
Do you want a sense of what some of the approaches are?
Canada.
Okay. Rick, I'm looking at you. you need to figure something out, Senator Wessel.
But I want to make sure I understand Representative Maurer's request, because we just agreed to talk about benefits, and while other countries have certain benefit packages and things, I understand that application. It seems to me an implication of your question was, you know, what other delivery systems are there? So it's benefits.
benefits and what services.
Benefits
offered,
and services.
Yeah, they're kind of tied.
Well, okay. And it's getting at the bifurcated system. Some services you can get right away, some you can't get right away, and, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. just how they structure. Because you go to UK, I know, for example, you go there and access to some services or how they control cost. I mean, it takes a long time to get some things. It's, you know, I mean, that's kind of a driver. So that all rolls into that. So.
Okay, right. So. Yeah. And we talked about our prioritized list.
It'd be nice to know how the insurance companies set up their systems.
We forced them.
Yeah, other than the mandates we put on them.
That's right.
Other than the 37 mandates, you know.
But they have contracts and.
That's exactly right. Sometimes it's the purchaser who defines the benefits.
Bruce, I would, I guess, following up that, Medicaid and Medicare, be interested in knowing their benefit structures as well.
Now, I'm going to stop this right here because, well, I'll give the co-chair one.
I'm clairvoyant. Senator Moore has something important to say.
Can't have a private conversation with that man. I just offered to the co-chair, I brought back from Taiwan a very interesting tape on how they have managed their health care that would be informative, I believe. And I'd be, and it's a, not a tape, it's a, what do you call it, it's a CD.
Wouldn't we be better served going to Taiwan to look at it? Because the food there's really good.
You guys all, stuck with Maui. We're not going.
It's a video?
No, you fly over.
I'll give it to Rick, and if we want to set up a projector, and it is kind of, I think, informative what they've been able to do.
Okay. Might be a great way to start to look at a different approach. What I would say is we could spend 3-4 months amassing information and thinking about benefits. And I don't think that's going to work if you want to come up with a bill. So,
Bruce, are we looking at trying to get our hands around what a basic benefit package would be? I mean, is that?
I think that's where we're going.
Well, if that's where we're going, and would some of our think tanks in the state maybe have some suggestions on that? I'm looking at that young lady in black over there. But
well, hold on a second.
Okay.
Is the idea
The question.
Right,
a question.
But let me ask you all this question, because I think this is key. Do you want to define what a benefit package is, or do you want to talk about how and if that entity would define it? Do you want to give the responsibility to that entity and give them a sense of how to do that? Or do you want to sit here and do that?
Or, in fact, are we talking about a single benefit package?
Well, that's
mm-hmm. yeah, that too.
The answer is we might not be.
That's legit.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just throwing it out.
Senator Moore.
I would draw your attention to the letter that we got from Dr. Huntington, who's here today. Thank you, Dr. Huntington from Corvallis. And a couple of the terms jumped out at me, and I think it relates to this benefit discussion. And those clinical priorities and practice guidelines. And that's something that physicians need to incorporate into this model in order to make it work. In terms of benefits, the benefits need to derive from those clinical priorities and practice guidelines. So I'm not sure just how far we can go down this road, because as he indicates, other experiences in other places, this is a long, evolving, very thoughtful process. to arrive at those issues.
And I'd say one of the holy grails, and one of the several holy grails in healthcare, is defining what a basic benefit package is. So I would say that would be hard to do. What you might want to think about is how a group might approach this
process.
And talk about some of the process, talk about whether there's one or multiple, how you might deal with some of this as opposed to starting to talk about discrete services.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Bates.
Thank you. I would caution us that we absolutely do not want, at this point, or any time in the near future, decide by this committee what an essential benefit package is. We might, I've been at this for 25 years, and been in more meetings about than I care to think about, and no one's ever done it, so let's not even think about it. What we might want to do, though, there are three or four packages we can look at, and they're always complete and done. Health Services has one. Most insurance companies, the larger ones, have one that are pretty specific. You can look at those and pick and choose that one of those if you so desire. I would also
process.
I'd even be careful with that, but that's possible. Okay? I would be a little bit nervous about delegating this to the board or whatever to call the entity. Okay, this might be something that is that they should be told, because they're going to have to come back with an idea of what this program would cost, and that's going to be then what this benefit package looks like. Defining it for them or picking one for them would be, I think, a step in the right direction. I'm not sure I want to give them that responsibility or give them that far. The other thing is, if we want these accountable health plans to truly be able to compete with each other for the health card or the business of the business from a corporation, the benefit plan has to be the same and it has to be transparent. Right now, when you go to get a health care plan, most of us, myself for sure, I can never think of all the things I want to look at inside that benefit plan. And so I'm comparing apples to oranges every time I look at an insurance. And I think we need to be careful on both those issues.
It is 6:35. I think we've done great work. We've agreed somewhat reluctantly on an entity. We've talked about where we want to go to next. I think we'll try and do a little work ahead of the next meeting to sort of figure out how to proceed with the discussion. And why don't we end there unless there are some final words.
Don't lose my CD.
Any comments for the good of the order?
This was great.
Yeah, one observation. I really genuinely want to thank the committee tonight for some very thoughtful, good, productive work. I mean, we are significantly further down the road than we were at the end of the last meeting. And the only difference I know between this meeting and the last meeting, we have the same members, same facilitators, and the only real difference was who was chairing the meeting.
I knew that was coming.
So I just, and Jeff Cruz is here. So that's it. I chair, and Jeff has to be here.
Which only makes me realize how hard the other members of the committee have worked, because despite those two things, we made progress. So I appreciate it.
Okay, well, those are things you can think about until next Wednesday. This coming Wednesday.
Thank you, Bruce.
Okay.
Very good meeting, guys. Good job, everybody. We are adjourned.
Okay.